Hi, it's Brian Darvell.
Hi, Brian.
Bruce.
Lucy Nichols.
Welcome, Lucy.
Barbara Roseman.
Hello, this is Mark Schneider. Good evening.
Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, Mark.
Barbara, I may have to step away from the call for a bit. I'll notify you if I have to do that and then call back in. If it's something that's an item that I need to be here for, maybe we'd be able to readjust the schedule if I have to be away for about 15 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mark, you have got the proxy for Carlos Afonso.
Thank you, Ben. Here is Benny from Brazil.
Now, are you joining the conference?
Hi, Demi.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, who is the last person before Demi?
Larry.
Demi.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, it's Jordan Buchanan.
Good morning, Jordan.
Good afternoon.
Eu estou na conferência com o internacional. Vai levar uma hora mais ou menos. Você fica aí.
É, eu estou mesmo.
Philip joining.
Welcome, Philip.
Hi.
Holding any proxies, Philip, for Maryland?
I'm certainly holding one for Maryland, yes. I'm hoping Grant is on the call.
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Hi, Grant joining.
Oh, there you go.
Welcome, Grant.
Yes, Tony Harris from Argentina.
Right. Joining me.
Alec rejoining.
Ah, okay. Hi, Alec. Okay. Is that someone else joining?
No, this is Mark Schneider. I got myself disconnected and I'm now reconnected.
Okay, fine. All right, I'll just run through a roll call to see who we've got, and I believe we now have quorum. Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
Marilyn Payne. Grant Forsyth.
Marilyn won't be joining the call, and I'm taking her from Grant.
Ken Stubbs. Kerry Carr.
Present.
Jordan Buchanan.
I'm online.
And either of you have a proxy for Ken?
Ken has told me that he'll be joining us slightly later. He'll be here in about 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Tony Harris.
I'm here.
Tony Holmes.
Yes.
Tony, you have a proxy for Greg?
Yes, that's correct.
Jisik Wu. Carlos Alfonso is absent with apologies. Mark Schneiders?
Yes.
And you have a proxy for Carlos, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Ross Rader?
Here, yeah.
Tom Keller? Okay, I'm here. Nicholas Lagergren?
I'm here.
Kiyoshi Chisuru?
Hi, I'm here.
Lucy Nichols?
I'm present.
Good. Amadeo? Okay. Demi Gitsko?
I'm here.
Alec Wilson?
I'm here.
And Thomas Rossler?
Yep.
And do we have anyone from the GAC? Christopher or Suzanne? Okay, and do we have anyone from the CCTLDs, Elizabeth or Jung? Okay. The agenda for today is basically approving the minutes of the last meeting, looking at the timelines for the various task forces and getting an update from the task force chairs, which are Brian Darville, Jeff Newman and Jordan. Item four is looking at firstly, there's a request from the business constituency to offer the terms of reference, which I'll deal with first, and then there is a discussion on the constituency statements as submitted so far. Item five is an update on planning for the ICANN meeting in Rome. Item six was on the topic of WISIS, and Marilyn has requested that be delayed until the next meeting, which is not over. And Philip Shepherd has requested discussion on the adoption of the guidelines for the production of issues reports. So I might leave that to the end and see how, if we have time. If we don't have time, we'll hold that over until the next meeting. So, any other changes or requests regarding agenda? Okay. So moving on to item two, which is the approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Do I have a seconder for approving those minutes? Thanks, Philip. Are there any comments or changes on the minutes? Okay, all those in favour of accepting the minutes for the last meeting say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions?
Nicholas Lagergren.
Okay.
Lucy Nichols.
Kiyoshi Suru.
Lucy, and what was it, Kiyoshi?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll note those minutes as passed. Item three is regarding the who is task forces. As a starting point on the timelines, Barbara Roseman, do you have a report on timelines? There was a conference call last week on this topic, so I'm not sure what we're up to.
Sure. There's actually a couple of issues involved here. The first is that Bruce and I scheduled a conference call with the chairs of the WHOIS task forces in an attempt to coordinate the schedules a little bit better and to see if we could work out a timeline that seemed appropriate for everybody's work. We did develop a timeline, but in presenting it to the task forces this week, we've run across a concern that we raised briefly in our meeting, but I think didn't perhaps give enough consideration to, about the timing of requesting the constituency statements. And just as some, let me just give a little bit more overview on the timeline that we developed in our collective meeting. Our goal was to attempt to finish our work on the WHOIS PDPs in sufficient time for the board to give some consideration to the final report before they meet in Kuala Lumpur, which is going to be in July. So our overall aim was to attempt to have work completed by the end of May so that the board could consider the final report in June, and if they requested additional action or investigation or work, that could be done between the June board meeting and the July ICANN meeting in Kuala Lumpur. So, can you hold on just a moment?
Sure.
Sorry about that. I'm going to be called away to another call in just a minute, but let's finish this. So in our discussions in the task force calls, only two of the task forces were able to meet this week, and in both of those discussions, there were concerns raised about the timing of requesting the constituency statements before new data that we're developing right now has been made available for the constituencies. And it's a concern that I probably take more seriously now than I did during our initial discussions, because I think there's, in fact, a way to change the timing of receiving the constituency statements without dramatically overhauling the overall time schedule. And that's something that I would like, in fact, to propose, is that we change the timing of receipt of the constituency statements to better allow the constituencies to review the additional data that's being developed during the gathering process. And just as a sort of meta commentary, the PDP as it's currently designed does not seem to take into account the idea of there being a data gathering period. That it seems as if the PDP is designed primarily to work on issues that already have all of their data developed, and it's a policy discussion that needs to take place. In this particular PDP, in the WHOIS PDP, we're definitely dealing with something that where additional data was required, where people wanted to get a better sense of what it was possible to do and what the consequences of doing these different actions might be, and that information, it seems to me, is extremely relevant to the constituencies in getting them to create a statement that is not simply a reiteration of their previous position. So that's where we stand right now. My suggestion is that we move the timetable to have constituency statements be due around mid to late March. And while that will impose a great burden on completing the preliminary report in a timely fashion, it allows the constituencies better time to review the materials that will be developed prior to the Rome meeting and during the workshops of the Rome meeting.
So the content of material for the Rome meeting will primarily be the outcome of the data gathering exercises, is that correct?
That's the intention, yes. Now, one of the task forces has proposed a much longer time period, but we haven't, in fact, that task force was the one that didn't have an opportunity to meet this week. And I think that their proposed schedule is a little drawn out for what it needs to be. Perhaps it may require a little more time than the other ones do, but it sees its work concluding in June, and I would push hard to have the work conclude in May.
Right. I suspect the reality is it will probably, if you set a date of May, it will probably mean that it actually happens in June.
So. Yeah, that's sort of what I have in mind.
Yes.
I'm sorry, this is Ken Stubbs. I got in just a couple minutes late. Are we referring to the who is timeline?
Yes, we're just discussing the timeline. Oh. That's right, Ken.
On the who is report.
On who
I
is,
apologize.
Yes.
Okay.
Right, yeah, Kent, this is in regards to the three task forces for the who is PDP. We haven't begun discussing the other one yet.
Thanks, Barbara. I'm sorry.
For this time, I just want to say that I'm joined as well.
Okay, thank you, Tom. So a summary of what Barbara has said is that the aim is to complete the work of the three who is task forces in time for the board to approve the policy recommendations in its meeting in Kuala Lumpur in July.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the GNSO Council will need to have approved those recommendations at least a month before that, and that was kind of where we're looking at the finalisation of the work. What Barbara's planning in, over the next couple of months is planning work for the meeting in Rome, scheduling the timing of the when the constituency papers are due in, scheduling when the a preliminary task force report is due to be complete, so that will contain the outcome of the constituency statement. And then there is a date for publishing the task force report itself. Then there's a 20-day public comment period, compliant with bylaws. Then there's a final report, and then the council meets to discuss the final report. So those are the, I guess, the main dates that need to be set as part of the PDP process. So, Barbara, do you feel you have a set of dates for the council to sign off, or should we wait until the next meeting on the 5th of February to have a final set of dates?
I don't feel confident that I have a set of dates because I think it's going to require at least one more round of meetings with the task forces to confirm that the dates are acceptable. There was a lot of pushback on some of the dates, particularly the constituency statement dates, in our discussions this week. And the tentative date that I put forward was March 12th for receiving constituency statements.
Yep.
And that puts us at about 9 days after the GNSO meeting in Rome, and about 3 weeks after the publication of the interim report, which is the data gathering material.
Yep.
So I guess I'm not sure that I'm at a point where I can definitively put before you the schedule, but I think that I can say that the task forces will adopt a schedule that they all mutually agree to next week. And that will be our operating schedule, and therefore, if we have to wait until next month for you guys to confirm it, that would be okay. Because
that's only 2 weeks away. So
well, it's also the operating schedule, so,
Yeah. If the task force has met and confirmed their dates next week, then the following week the council can sign off on that and then notify the board that that's the schedule that we'd like to work to.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me.
Okay. Now, I'd like to hand over now to the chairs of the Who Is Task Force each individually give a report and an update.
I'm going to step away. I'll send Glenn in a chat message when I return.
Okay, thank you, Barbara.
Okay. Christopher Wilkinson called in. I was on for the last few minutes, but I didn't interrupt the flow.
Okay, thank you, Christopher. So, Jeff Heumann, would you like to...
Sure.
Give an update on your task force and what's happening in terms of data gathering and so on?
Sure.
sure. Again, I'm talking on behalf of Task Force 1, which is the task force on restricting access. We are well underway to completing a questionnaire that hopefully will go out either tomorrow or Monday to a list of identified what we call non-marketing users of WHOIS information. And the questionnaire asks questions such as where do you get your WHOIS information from, whether they use a web-based WHOIS or a port 43, questions to that effect, and also trying to get at whether there are alternate sources for the data that they're seeking, and tries to get at the effect, what would be the effect on that particular organization if, let's say, a port 43 was shut down. So that survey is going to go out hopefully tomorrow or Monday. We'll also send out on Monday, as Barbara was saying, a solicitation to all the constituencies to begin the constituency statements, and whenever you guys decide that they're due. The task force is also compiling a what we call a needs and justifications chart, which not only is going to have the responses that we receive from the surveys, but will also have the information that has been gained in the past from the multiple workshops that ICANN has had, and also from testimony from the FTC in the United States and from the OECD as well. So that's pretty much where we stand. We're making very good progress, and people at Task Force are working really hard at getting this done as quickly as we can.
And, Jeff, you're envisaging a interim report, is that right, in time for Rome?
I'm sorry, say it again?
You're anticipating a interim report on all that activity for the Rome meeting, is that correct?
Yes, the interim report will be kind of an extension of our needs and justifications chart, but it will have some good information to talk about at the workshop to basically stimulate discussion and hopefully to start gathering feedback for policy recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Jeff. Brian Darwin?
Yes. Chair of Task Force 3, which is the task force addressing WHOIS data accuracy, where we are in the process with respect to milestone one in the terms of reference, we have formally contacted the registrar constituency and surveyed them concerning their current techniques for collecting and verifying data accuracy. And we have that information gathered and summarized. So that part of the process is complete. We've also prepared and sent a questionnaire for inclusion in a survey of member CCTLDs being conducted by Center. And that went out last week, and presumably that brief questionnaire will be included as part of their survey. So we should get benefit of that survey, which I understand is to be completed by mid-February. The task force also transmitted to ICANN staff for distribution to other CCTLDs and I guess regional CCTLD groups. The same survey, so hopefully that will generate some responses as well, that we will have information concerning their data verification practices. We've also prepared a questionnaire, which I believe is final, which is to companies and other industries who transact business online to get a sense of their methodologies for gathering, verifying the accuracy of their customer data. And that questionnaire is complete. We also have prepared a list of companies in other industries to contact. This is near complete. We're going to have a few additions. We'll very soon, perhaps as early as Monday be in a position to start surveying and data from companies and other industries concerning their data verification practices. And my sense is that is the part of the data gathering that is going to take the most time. We are requesting that we get responses by February, I believe, so that we can include that in an interim report, which is not a preliminary report, but I guess a new animal, that we would try to circulate a week before Rome on February 25. I think the big question mark is the extent to which we receive significant responses to that survey by the February 16 date. We'll certainly be using force members and constituency members to use their personal contacts to get these other companies to focus on the survey and give us some meaningful responses. So we've made some significant progress. In terms of the schedule, there's been some discussion. We thought it made sense to go ahead and get the request for the constituency statements out, although I think the task force as a whole believes that we're not likely to get a whole lot of meaningful information until, unless the constituencies have an opportunity to comment on some of the data that's been gathered. So I think the idea of moving the responses to the constituency statements to March 12 would make some sense.
Okay, and I guess the key thing there is as long as constituencies know what the timeline is.
Exactly. And so if Barbara gets the call out next week and they respond request the statements next week for a response date of March 12th, that should work pretty well, I think, or at least better than the current February 16 deadline.
Yeah, like it means that the constituencies can put that on the agenda for their meetings in Rome, so they'll have the data that you've already prepared, and they can effectively use their own constituency meetings in Rome to start identifying their main statements.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Jordan Buchanan.
Thanks, Bruce. We put together a number of questionnaires that we intend to send out, coordinated through the staff, to basically all the constituencies. We have a specific set of questions for the registrar constituency, as they are responsible for doing, more things with regards to who is currently than anyone else is. But we have a number of questions for all of the registrars, all of the constituencies, in terms of how constituency members make use of certain data elements and whether or not specific data elements are required or used widely and so on in order to make a determination as to whether or not they need to continue to remain in the public domain. And similarly, if there's fields that are not currently published in the WHOIS that ought to be. Similarly, we put together a list of questions for distribution to the CCNSO launching group, and as well as probably to Center, who's conducting a survey of their own with regards to who is in the near future. And these, we also have one set of questions that we intend to distribute to the GAC as well in order to get an understanding of what privacy legislation or policies may exist in various countries that may be relevant to the display and collection of who is data. So we've basically, I think, completed all or nearly all of the work required in order to get these questionnaires published out to the various people that we need to gather data from. In addition to that, we've been looking for ancillary sets of data that may already exist out there, such as from OEDC, EPIC, and various other groups that may have compiled lists of legislation that is relevant here, or existing work that's already been done by the previous WHOIS task force, similarly, in order to get a feel for how data is used. So very much still in the data gathering phase and preparing, I think, quite a bombardment of questions to various people in order to get a sense of how data is used in order to allow the task force to make some intelligent decisions about privacy. Also, just with regards to calendaring, I think Barbara mentioned earlier that we are the task force that has circulated a calendar that's quite a bit longer in duration than the current proposed time frame. Although I think probably with the understanding that we wanted to have a work product for a council meeting in June, so that could be voted upon and approved for a board meeting in July. It seems like it actually requires only a modest compression of the somewhat lengthier time frame that we've proposed. But we actually have a large number of milestones to address as part of our work, and to a certain extent, we want to make sure that we have a sufficient time once data has been gathered to have good policy discussion. Because it may be that the PDP's anticipated somewhat narrower questions in terms of what exactly, of the time frames and how long you have in order to consider them and develop good positions on the policy side. So that's, I guess, a brief update from Task Force 2.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. Just on the topic of sending requests to groups such as the GAC and the CCNSO and so on, the advisory bodies would normally comment formally as an advisory body during the various public comment phases of the policy process. But in terms of data collection, they're probably a very useful distribution point for surveys. So I guess in the wording that you send your request to groups such as the GAC, what you're probably looking for is individual responses from the GAC members rather than a coordinated response from the GAC committee itself. Is that your understanding, Jordan?
This is actually a point that we've sought some guidance from the council on in terms of how exactly the interaction with the various advisory bodies or other external bodies takes place. I think that individual responses are probably equally helpful as a coordinated response from the GAC in its advisory capacity. So I think it's probably sufficient to take that the route that you proposed, Bruce.
Jordan,
Bruce,
Thomas
Bruce?
Here, if I just may.
Bruce, may you put me in the queue, please? Yes, Thomas, and then Christopher.
I'm just jumping in here because I basically had to help with on one of the calls where Jordan was absent. The set of questions that the task force has basically agreed on for distribution through the GAC is phrased as questions to individual GAC members. The set of questions is not phrased in a way that would solicit formal advice from the GAC, but it is phrased in a way which would request information about individual jurisdictions, about the jurisdictions of individual GAC members. So just to clarify this.
Okay, thank you.
Questions that demand now are not about formal advice.
Yeah, no, that's what I was trying to say as well. So
okay.
I apologize, it didn't come across clearly.
Christopher, your comment from the GAC?
Hi. First of all, I had in mind to ask whether the questionnaires and other papers that have been prepared by the three task forces will be posted or circulated to the GNSO list, because I find it rather difficult to visualize and imagine in the abstract what the questions to the operators, to the users, and to the governments would actually be. It would help me if I could consult these papers, and I suppose the secretariat could post them. I'm not sure what the reaction of GAC members would be. government officials, including our GAC members, are quite reluctant to respond unilaterally, sort of country by country. And in any event, GAC would want to reserve the possibility of giving the board advice on the outcome of the exercise at the end of the process. So I think I need to understand what the questions are likely to be, and then perhaps take soundings with the GAC, who is working group, and others to see how they're likely to respond.
Yeah, this is Jordan again. I think that we definitely can provide links to the discussions that have already taken place on the list, which include sets of questions. But essentially, the questions are along the lines of what legislation or policy exists within specific countries in order to that may affect who is data collection and display. I think it's probably difficult to imagine that there's a coordinated response along those lines, because it is so variant from one jurisdiction to the next.
So I guess what you're looking for is data rather than an opinion.
Yeah,
so
exactly correct.
Presumably governments could sort of say, this is the existing law, which is not a subject of opinion, it's a fact. And then any opinions on policy recommendations would be something that would be done later on in the process.
Yeah, the intention of all the data gathering questions that we're posing are to get existing factual uses or policies or existing practices, as opposed to trying to get solicit opinions on what policies should be constructed.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment on this topic, which is really what's the best way to request information from members of advisory bodies?
This is Barbara. This is. I'm returning to the call. This is just a comment that does not have to do with the content of any of these requests, but that all of the. It's not something I had a chance to say in the workshop meetings. All of these forms that we send out should, as much as possible, be in plain text, because it makes coordinating the responses much, much simpler. So that's just let's not be sending out PDF documents and Word documents if we can help it.
Any comments from council members on any of the WHO is Task Force reports or on any of the issues that have been raised?
Hello?
Yes, Elizabeth.
Good evening, this is Elizabeth Portenoff. I'm sorry I did not said hello when I was joining. Unless I misunderstood Jordan, who was just reporting about his working group, he said something that he is preparing questionnaire for the CCNSO launching group and center. Just observation, CCNSO launching group it's not a body which have to deal with any policy, any questionnaire, anything. These people have to set up CCNSO and nothing else. So if you prepare the questionnaire, please post it to me, and I will ensure that it is distributed to CCTLD worldwide.
This is Barbara. We're sending it to the CCNSO to distribute to their members if they see fit. That's not a request from the CCNSO for a policy statement.
But I think what Elizabeth is offering to do is to help distribute it to...
That's fine. We can use both forms, but I don't think we should ignore that there is a group within ICANN that is trying to arrange something, that they have members who are participatory members, and let's use them as a resource.
Still, Barbara, I'm sorry. There is not yet CCNSO, because the three conditions which had to be fulfilled are not yet fulfilled. So there's only CCNSO launching group, not CCNSO yet.
That's correct, and I'm suggesting that we send it to them to ask if their participating group would like their members
to...
I suggest the role of these people is to prepare CCNSO not to deal with any policy. I suggest you to contact a person like myself, and I commit you to transfer your question or questionnaire or whatever to all regional organizations and to all CCTLD.
Yeah, Elizabeth, we had intended all along to include you on the distribution as well. So
thank you very much.
Do that.
Actually, from what I understand, Glenn should have sent the questions to a little bit something like Tuesday last week.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. We did make a request to Glenn to do that.
Okay. Any other comments or questions regarding the Hoover's task force work? Okay, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Find it. Okay, the next item is regarding the policy development process relating to approval for requests for changes in the architectural operation of the registry. The first issue I'd like to deal with here is a request from the business constituency to alter the terms of reference. Would Philip Shepherd, do you like to speak to that?
I'd like to speak to
that. Sorry, Grant, go ahead.
Oh, with agreement. Thanks, Phil. yes, thank you, Bruce. As my email to the council noted, it really wasn't until we started digging into responding to the terms of reference that we quickly found that the constraints built into the terms of reference, i.e. those matters which had been considered to be out of scope, really were inappropriate. And I've looked at some of the exchanges that have followed, and thank you to those who have taken the opportunity to respond ahead of this meeting. And I think that there is a question here as to the almost dual relationship that ICANN plays vis-a-vis its relationship with the registries. ICANN is obviously a contracting party, and so therefore is a party to a contract, in this case, the contract with registries. But ICANN also performs a much wider role, which is one that we ourselves participate in right now. And it is in fulfillment of its wider role that we would suggest it not be constrained by whatever is in an existing contract. I don't think I need to say any more at this stage. I think hopefully the short explanation we provided to the council lays out our thinking on the matter, and I think it would be beneficial to the policy development process if those two constraints were removed.
And the constraint that you're referring to is the constraint that the policy development wouldn't actually change the registry contracts. Is that I don't think we're talking about any constraint on ICANN so much as just a constraint that we're not changing the registry contracts. So it's slightly different meaning there, I think. Because to change a contract would require agreement from both parties anyway, and we're not, you know, we can direct ICANN, but we can't direct the registries directly.
Quite right. The constraint is on this policy development process, and our view is if we constrain our thinking in the manner which the terms of reference are currently structured, then there are matters which I have seen in other constituencies' responses, and certainly are in our own constituency response today, which would not fit within the terms of reference. And so in order for us to properly consider and develop a policy to address this matter, it's our suggestion that the two constraints in the outer scope be removed.
Bruce, would you put in a queue, please?
Yes. Ken, anyone else like to join the queue?
Yeah, Jordan as well.
Okay, anyone else?
Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, frankly, I'm a little bit confused because the terms of reference were posted out to the council prior to the meeting, and the terms of reference were approved by the members of the council by a vote of, I believe, 15-3. And it would seem to me that at that point in time, prior to the members of the various constituency, including the business constituency, voting on these terms of reference, I'm certain that there had to have been adequate time for deliberation, because I know how concerned there is, how much the concern there is for the deliberative process, especially in your constituency, has been echoed in the past by on previous posts. So I have to assume that if you voted in favor, along with many of the other constituencies with it, that this was done with a sense of deliberation, and there was no indication at that point in time on the part of the majority of the council members that there was any need for any additional deliberation, nor was there any abstention as a result of this. I would be very concerned that we consider modifying the terms of reference, because if we do, I would say that it would only be fair to take any amended term of reference, if it was passed, and bring it back to the various constituencies and give them the opportunity to deliberate on the proposed amendments, number one. And number two, there's a possibility that in reaction to an amended proposed amended TOR, that other constituencies may very well at that point in time desire to weigh in. I think in doing such, we would pervert the timeline that we're all very anxious to keep here. So from a practical standpoint, I wouldn't be at all in favor of having to change the process at this point in time.
This is Barbara. I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay.
Bruce,
George.
I might just also join the queue as well.
Could you add Tony as well, please?
Okay. Anyone else wanting to join the queue? Okay, go ahead, George.
Yeah, like Ken, I'm a little confused and really somewhat distressed that this, as I indicated on the council list, that this request has come to light at a late date. On the last call, in reviewing the minutes in my notes, I see that Carrie Karp had requested that we delay the launch of the PDP in order to allow some refinement of the terms of reference, specifically to allow the refinement. Side dialogue I'm getting here.
And we've got someone speaking Portuguese in the background, I believe.
Okay, I'll resume. As I indicated, we specifically requested that some changes, that we allow some additional time in order to allow changes. And I think Bruce had further suggested that we adopt the launch of the PDP, but allow some flexibility in the terms of reference. I think the council was quite adamant at that time, and there was a vote on this subject that I think carried 21-6. That we should proceed with the existing terms of reference with no latitude to allow changes. And then to come a month later, after the public comment period even has ended, and suddenly broach new changes, I think strikes me as a little concerning, given the previous stance of the business constituency on this very subject. And further, I guess I would add, to echo Ken's thoughts, we do have some changes that we'd probably like to make if we knew that it was possible to be tinkering again with the terms of reference. And if we are going to allow change to the terms of reference, it seems only fair and prudent to allow a global reexamination of the terms of reference, as opposed to allowing individual constituencies to sort of surprise us with some changes at this late date. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. Barbara, you're next.
Yes, I'd like to strongly suggest that we not change the terms of reference at this stage. I think we're pretty far along, and constituency statements have already been developed, and that it would be extremely disruptive to change them at this point. And in particular, I'd like to say that the goal of this PDP is to develop a policy recommendations about a process that theoretically could be applied regardless of whether there are changes to the nature of the registry agreements or not. What you're asking staff to do is to develop a process that is applicable in a variety of circumstances regarding an approval process. And I think that it is entirely possible to draft such a process without tying it to specific terms of contract in a way that if there are changes to contracts in the future, be able to use this process. And that's how I would like to encourage people to think about this. I don't think that's a necessary distinction to make in order to fulfill this PDP.
Okay, thanks, Barbara. Grant?
Perhaps just for courtesy, I'll go at the end, if I may, Bruce.
Okay, no problem. Tony Holmes.
Yes, thanks, Bruce. With the best will in the world, I don't think it's possible always to do a perfect job. And at the same time, I think it's remiss if we spot something that's substantial and we just then choose to ignore that on process. But I think we need to focus on what the issue is, and that shouldn't mean that if we do decide to consider this or even review the terms of reference, it should result in an open-ended call for review. If the magnitude of this is sufficient, then I believe it should be considered, and for me that's the issue, to actually just say, well, it's not part of the process, so if we find something that's really substantial later, we just ignore it. I really don't think that's the way to go at all, and I think it sets a bad precedent for the future if we choose to ignore that or ignore this issue on that basis.
Thanks, Tony. Bruce, I could just make...
back in the queue at the end, please.
Ken, okay. If I can just sort of make an observation just from a process point of view, I guess the terms of reference were to try and make sure that we could converge on a policy outcome rather than imply that we've covered everything that a policy could cover. And my intent in drafting the terms of reference was to basically stay with the current status quo is there is an existing contract between the registries and ICANN. That existing contract has many places where consent is required from ICANN for changes, and that the first task was to develop an approval process that ICANN could use in giving that consent. That seemed to me a useful first step. Now, it would also be appropriate for a constituency statement to say, this is our current view on the current approval process under those existing contracts. And then at the end of the constituency statement, you could say, and these are wider issues that this has raised, and we would suggest the following future policy outcomes. We then have two options there. One, we could incorporate that suggestion or policy change if it had consensus support, or two, we could then schedule a follow-up policy process after this one, is to say, okay, now that we have an approval process under the current arrangement, this is what we would like to have a separate policy process to look at changing the nature of the agreement. So that's just an alternative approach to a grant, would be to not be constrained in adding your suggestions in your statement, but add those to the end of your statement so that everybody has the chance to consider them. But at that point, I'll...
I think it's a useful suggestion, Bruce. Okay, am I Bruce?
Yes, go ahead, Bruce.
Firstly, I just note that the responses from Ken and Jordan and to a large extent Barbara have focused in on process and not in any way contributed to the issue which is raised by our concern. And that's, I think, a little disappointing because I would have hoped that there would be some contribution to the questions which we raised through our request. But they are right in saying that, you know, there is a purpose to process, and it's not the wish of the VC to in any way thwart process and in so doing wreck the development of the policy. What I think is also useful at this stage, in my very quick flip through the various statements that have been posted today, I note that no distinction is made in the comments and the policies before the proposals put forward. There are no distinctions made suggesting that the matters for consideration by the process that we're about to develop for looking at registry services, no distinction be made or no distinction be imposed to limit such review of ICANN only to those matters existing within the contract. And that is exactly the approach that BC has taken. And if the GNSO is comfortable that we just leave out any such constraint, then I think it meets our, certainly from the BC's point of view, it meets our outcome objective. We just thought it was more transparent to address this constraint, this out-of-scope constraint, at this time. There is, of course, one exception to what I've just stated, I observed, and that is possibly the registrar constituency statement, where in their review they have been quite specific as to a list of matters which I can might consider, or rather what the registry might put forward for approval by ICANN, and that probably is drawn from the scope of just contract. So Bruce and Barbara, I come to your suggestions, which is that as long as there is not a constraint built in to our eventual policy, then the objective, the outcome which BC is seeking through this process is addressed. And if that is a less disruptive way and a more productive way of achieving a sensible policy, then so be it. We just wanted to bring this matter to the attention of the Council as soon as we came across it. But again, it's not our purpose in so doing to wreck the process.
Ken, you were next. Ken
Sanchez. Yes, Bruce, just a couple of things. First of all, I'll take them backwards and in the order of which the discussion came up. Please correct me if I'm wrong, Barbara, but I believe that the PDPs are limited to ICANN's actions and approvals under the contract. Frankly, it's not clear what basis there would be for ICANN actions on points not covered by the agreement, and frankly, it might be a good idea to review that last comment that I'm making there with John Jeffrey to see whether or not I'm credible at all. I feel I am. In any event, that's probably a matter for a future PDP, if at all. And frankly, there is a bit of a constraint to additional policy. What you're saying, Bruce, is that there's no constraint on comments. And I'm not sure where we're going with this thing. And I think you probably have to go back and take a very close look at the actual wording of the PDP itself for we could make this thing. Before we can put that issue to bed. Now, with respect to the earlier grant made, Grant, I don't think it's a matter of arguing the points that you have at this point in time. I think I, what we, what at least what I was concentrating on, and I was following up to what I felt was post that Jordan made that was on spot, and that is that I felt at this point is how we were principally with, working towards determining exactly how the process was going to be managed at this point in time. There are clearly issues that each of the constituencies has, as frankly, as pointed out in the various statements, that are going to have to be discussed in the future. But I didn't think that this was an appropriate time to get into a long discussion on those issues. So I want you to understand why I've refrained from trying to take a debate on that specific issue into the forum at this point in time. Thank you.
This is Barbara. Can I address that?
Yeah, and this is Jordan. Can I jump in too?
Okay, Barbara, then Jordan.
And then a bit of Phil.
And then Philip.
And also Johnny, please.
Okay, and Tony. Anyone else like to join the queue? Okay, go ahead, Barbara.
Ken, I don't have John Jeffrey on the call today, so I can't give you any kind of an official opinion, but yes, we're constrained to all of our policy, all of our processes that ICANN staff engages in are obviously constrained by the current contracts that we're in. What I was stating and what I believe to be true is that it's possible to draft a process that in fact is relatively independent of contract in the terms of how that process gets applied. I mean, yes, the particulars of the process in terms of what actually gets looked at and what how the decisions are rendered clearly have to be done within the context of a contract, but the process itself for examining an issue doesn't necessarily have to be tied to a contractual setting. I don't want to make too big a deal out of that one way or the other. I actually think that we're going to be able to come up with a process that will be applicable if there are future changes to the contract. I also think that it's almost inevitable that in the growth of an institution that has as many dynamic parts as ours does, that processes will have to undergo change as well. That's just the nature of how, an industry like ours works, is that, when something functions well for a while, then enough changes accumulate and you have to change the process for how you examine things. But I think we're going to be able to come up with something that does not make perhaps explicit reference to the contract as a means of designing the process.
Okay. Jordan?
Right, just to echo that, when I think back to how this PDP started, my recollection is that Paul Toomey had requested that the council put together a mechanism by which that the staff could use to review changes that the registries requested pursuant to their existing contracts, or potentially even in making amendments, but a process by which the staff could reasonably determine whether or not those changes should go forward. And that seems to be a process entirely external to any modifications to the contract one way or the other, although it may make it possible or give the staff a mechanism by which to consider future changes to the contract. I think if we go the route of saying that this PDP is actually, let's review the registry contracts and find things about them that we're not particularly happy with, the registries would be glad to get at the very front of that line and suggest things that might be wrong with the contracts today. And I think actually we would have a very long list. It would be a very exciting discussion, and we would love to engage in that conversation at some point in time. However, I think that is not a streamlined PDP, and I think that conversation is likely to get very bogged down in a variety of competing proposals, and I think it will be exceedingly difficult to find a meeting of the minds in anything approaching the timeline that the staff has requested in order to be able to move forward with requests made by registries in order to protect the interests of the various other stakeholders. So with respect to Grant, that's, you know, in response to the substance of your request, that's why I'm concerned about opening up the discussion. But further, I think that, you know, we've actually struck onto a fairly straightforward TDP here that the registries have reluctantly, you know, started work on. We thought that there were some good tweaks to make to the terms of reference in the past. The council, I think, decided that we should move forward with the terms of reference as is, and we started work along those lines and hope to be able to continue it. And reopening the terms of reference for further discussion at this point is definitely going to be a setback to our process, at least.
Okay. Philip?
Thank you, Bruce. I just want to be entirely practical and pragmatic. I don't see at all the change we're asking is going to be a setback to any work that's been done so far. If we recall, the process we're engaged in is all about a procedure for consent and related contractual amendments in relation to registered services. What we're saying is that we were, when we started looking at the detail of this, confused by the fact that we're saying out of scope changes to the nature of the agreements or additional obligations to the existing agreement. And it seemed as eminently practical that a number of things we talk about could lead to precisely those sort of changes, and we didn't want to get into semantic arguments as to what the nature of the agreement is, etc., versus a consent-related contractual amendment. So it seemed only practical to call for this change, and I'm a little surprised by the seeming resistance we have to this. Frankly, it seems to be one process we've come to simply by being able to spend a bit more time to study the matter at hand.
Philip, just for my understanding, I guess I don't quite understand what you would be recommending that would be affected by the scope that's currently there. Are you saying that if a registry operator wanted to change their agreement in any form, so they just wanted a completely new agreement, are you saying that that would be out of scope of this procedure? Is that what you're getting at? I'm not sure that I'm getting the point.
What is currently written in out of scope is changes to the agreements. And what we're saying is, precisely, we may have a process that leads to changes to the nature of the agreements. It may be something that is precisely being sought by the contract party, and therefore, serves out of scope seems to be illogical.
Bearing in mind that a change requires both parties to agree.
Absolutely. It won't happen otherwise.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
This is Barbara Schneider.
Can I just...
Yep. I'll just add sort of Grant and Barbara to the queue because I've got Tony as well. So I'll just proceed through the queue. So I've got Tony, Grant, and Barbara.
Okay, Christopher. Bruce, I think it may be helpful at this stage if you let Barbara and Grant go before me.
Okay, go ahead, Grant.
I think, Bruce, all I want to reflect on is that we are tasked to come up with a policy to, as the title says, for ICANN to review requests for consent related to contractual amendment, etc.
Yep.
So we just focus on the thing request.
Yep.
And as Philip has pointed out, what follows behind the request seems firstly to be perhaps in conflict with this out of scope. The second thing is when we look at some of the statements that have been provided already, like our own, no distinction is made in those statements, and therefore one has to infer there is no suggestion coming forward from constituencies that those requests be constrained in the manner suitable to fitting into this out of scope. And Barbara has noted herself that the ICANN staff are themselves constrained by certain processes. We're simply tasked to come up with a process to consider requests. And all we're saying is that when we started to look at that process, and then we look more carefully at the scope, we realised we'd have to be putting in buts or constraints into the way in which we might characterise issues, types of consent, types of contractual matters, in order to make sure that the process we came up with fitted the terms of reference. In other words, it appeared the terms of reference was going to shoehorn the GNSO's response to count to the board in an unhelpful manner. I'm very happy, and our submissions to date and most of what I've seen so far, to have those submissions entirely absent any wording as to the sort of constraints noted in the outer scope. And that's really all I think would be the practical outcome of explicitly acknowledging and changing the terms of reference. And so, as Philip has said, this is not a matter of just broadening the process. It's really just bringing some transparency to the outcome policy, given what we have now come to understand as the nature of what's before us. Thanks.
Okay. Barbara?
I think I'll pass right now.
Okay. Tony Holmes?
Okay. The point that Grant made, I have some sympathy with, because I think it actually does enhance things in a positive way. I was also, I also thought that Barbara's earlier remarks were helpful as well, and I'd like to think that everyone will certainly remember those, and the way she described things offer some support for us to follow that through later. But the main point I wanted to make was to offer some support for the proposal you put forward, Bruce. I do think during this PDP there's going to be various things that come up that probably do need some serious consideration. And if they are a little bit out of scope or if we can't tackle them, I think we need some way of logging that and making sure that we pick them up later. So if that's the compromise path that we have to go down, then it's something I believe that our constituency can probably live with.
Yeah, essentially what I was suggesting is that we have the terms of reference as drafted, that the constituencies respond to those, to that terms of reference, but the constituency statements could also say, add other comments, because there's nothing in the policy development process that constrains in any way a statement that a constituency would like to make.
I'm going one step beyond that, Bruce, yes. Suggesting that if that's the case, then there needs to be a way that those things are gathered up.
I think that's right, and it can be gathered up in two ways. One is that if the particular suggestion has consensus, then it can obviously form a consensus policy at that time, as part of the work of the task force or the committee. If it doesn't at that stage, then it could then just be put into a follow-up process, which would be to say, we want to start up a separate policy development process on that issue that's raised, and create a new terms of reference and fire it off from there. So I think there's two options, and it just really depends on the strength of the suggestion or argument that's presented in the statement.
Bruce, this is Jordan. Can I jump in one quick second?
Who else was in the background then?
Ken Stubbs.
Okay, Jordan first, then Ken.
Yeah, first, I think that approach that you just reflect on, Bruce, I think, I'm fairly comfortable with, and I think, actually when we did the deletes task force some time ago, we actually identified a number of areas that we felt were external to the terms of reference but useful for some further follow-up policy work, and instead of trying to expand the scope of the task force and delay its work, we just, decided to identify them and allow the council to conclude at a later date whether or not it was actually worthy of further policy work. And I think certainly, I don't think anyone would view the terms of reference, the current constraints on the terms of reference, as precluding the council from being able to identify areas. areas as part of this discussion that may not be relevant at this date but are useful for further policy development work. And I suspect probably we'll encounter some of them as part of this policy development process. I just have a question. I listened to Grant's discussion of the rationale for this, and I'm just getting increasingly confused. Are you saying, Grant and Philip, that the reason why you want this change is because you want to make sure that the process could apply to potential changes in registry contracts, or are you saying that, that's my question.
I'll answer first if I might.
Sure.
And that is that in defining a process, which is the objective of this PDP, defining a process for ICANN, we don't want to unduly complicate that process with caveats vis-a-vis what is and what is not out of scope for ICANN to consider and for the registry to require ICANN to consider. We don't want to complicate that vis-a-vis contract.
Right. So, Grant, I guess I'm asking.
And again,
is your concern that your reading of the terms of reference right now that it might force ICANN to have one set of procedures that they use for changes that are not changes to the contract, and one set of procedures to other types of changes that are consistent but require consent to the existing contract? Is that the concern?
I think there's a number of concerns. That is one. That there may, in fact, if one is going to take a black letter law reading of what may come out of the process and what may be driven by this out of scope, then yes, that potential outcome that you've got to have two processes. Or, worse still, if there is this sort of distinction built into the process, then what we can see happening is that there will be a legal stoush before ICANN ever gets to consider or a request is even put to ICANN, because a registry will just say, well, it's out of scope, according to our legal opinion, and we'll fight on the legal opinion as opposed to the matter of substance. And so, from a practical point of view, we saw those sorts of constraints as being detrimental to the process.
Right. Well, I guess I'll just add, I view the constraint in the terms of reference as constraining the work of the policy development process, not constraining the end result in terms of what the process applies to.
Yeah, that's my interpretation as well. The intent of that constraint was just saying that the policy development process itself is not trying to change the contracts, but it's not intended to constrain a request. So a request could be for a change in any form, and then what we're looking at is what's the approval process for giving approval for a request, essentially.
Right, because otherwise it actually becomes self-referential. We would be saying that any changes to the contract have to go through this process, but we're suggesting changes that haven't gone through this process, and you end up in an infinite loop.
Yes, I think we've just got to be a bit careful. We're not reading too much into the terms of reference. We're starting to get legal argument over the words, and the words were mostly drafted by me fairly quickly. So,
am I still in the queue?
Yes. Christopher,
okay.
Go ahead now, if you like.
Well,
go ahead, Christopher.
The risk of being blocked again. I think you're breaking new ground. When I break new ground, I limit the patch to what I can do in a weekend. You may have to revisit some of these issues in the future. I'm not going to say anything about whether or not you should amend the terms of reference, but when I've been dealing with people, it's helpful to have stable terms of reference, even if afterwards you want to comment on the results. If you change the terms of reference halfway through, it does have repercussions which may be unanticipated. I also think that this process
because it's breaking new ground and it has acquired a certain profile, you need to have some results that you can report on to the board and to other interested parties in Rome. And I would just take this opportunity of advising you to take those perhaps over general reflections into consideration.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. I've lost track of the queue a little bit here. You're in the queue, Ken, I believe?
Yeah.
Anyone else in the queue or want to be in the queue?
It's also time for yours truly to return to domestic responsibilities, if I would be forgiven from leaving the call.
Okay, thanks, Christopher. Actually, just before you leave, one thing that you might just be able to confirm for us is, in terms of planning for the Rome meeting, was having a meeting between the GNSO and the GAC. Have you got anything to add on that?
We have a one-hour slot for GNSO on the Tuesday afternoon. At present, it's rather late, and we would have, in the GAC, an interest in having it a little bit earlier, but that depends on your schedules with the constituency. It is a closed session, so we're talking about a face-to-face briefing between GNSO and the GAC. And Bruce, as chairman, as a matter of protocol, it's basically up to you to decide who you bring with you. It is not closed in the session in the sense that you come alone. But the GAC is not in the business of inviting your delegation. You tell us who are the other members of your crew on that slot.
Yeah, well, I would, as a matter of process, invite the whole council to attend.
I understand that, and that's what happened before, in which case it's just a matter of how many chairs there are in the room, and at the limit, the gentleman, including the GAC secretariat, will stand at the back for such events.
Okay, thanks. that's all I wanted to just confirm. So at the meeting in the afternoon of Tuesday, the GAC has invited the GNSO to, present what work that we currently have on. Is that essentially what we're...
Absolutely. Yep. We can fine-tune nearer the time, but at present it's 5:30 to 6:30. I just note that if it was possible to do it a little bit earlier in the afternoon, it would suit the GAC schedule a little bit better, but we're flexible.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Okay. So back to this discussion point. Thank you, Chris. Ken?
Yeah, now we have three things. Start from the back. Glenn, would you please do at least me a favor, and I'm sure other members of the council, and kind of tickle us on that as we get closer to the meeting in Rome to make sure that we have a final resolution on the time slot for the meeting with the GAC, please.
Yeah, I think at this stage, Ken, the thought was probably 5:30, 6:30 time frame, just so that we didn't overlap with any constituency business. I guess if the constituencies have all finished their business well prior to that, we could change the date, but I'll really rely on input from the constituencies to let us know whether that's possible.
Okay. Secondly, I'd like to echo Christopher's comment with respect to his concern about making sure that there's something that we'll have something with a little bit of meat on it, hopefully be able to report out to everyone at the Rome meeting. And thirdly, I'd like to support the comments that you made earlier, Bruce, when I asked to be in the queue. I agree with you, and I'm very comfortable with the concept that the PDP is basically limits improvements to the process. And it's not really involved in changing the substance of agreement. So, I'm frankly, hopefully we can resolve that issue and
move forward, but I guess I don't know where else we go here.
Okay, what I would suggest is if Grant and Philip have two options at this point, they can put a motion forward and we can vote on it, or they can be satisfied that the business constituency statement would cover the terms of reference and also include any other suggestions or comments that they feel would be constrained by the terms of reference at the end of their statement. So I hand it across to
Bruce.
Philip to decide what you want to do.
Sure. Bruce, firstly, I want to thank everyone for their input, and particularly yourself and Barbara, I guess, is putting away some suggestions as to how to go forward given the concerns which we've raised. From my perspective and listening to the discussion, I'm reasonably comforted that no one has taken any outrageous objection to the substance of what we're addressing. And I, just for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not therefore reading into it that everyone's agreeing with me. But I do think what's been suggested by yourself and Barbara is a way forward, and I'm mindful of Christopher's wisdom there that you know, this is a new process, and let's not get into great stoushes over the process sake of them. It's certainly not what we're about. So with that, I think we're happy to have had this discussion. Thank the Council for contributing to it, and let's leave the terms of reference as they are, but as you've noted, Bruce and Barbara, where we think the comments we put forward need an additional comment in the manner that you've suggested, let's put those comments in.
Okay. Good, thank you. Okay, so just to move forward to the actual policy itself, work itself, we have statements from, I guess many of the statements are in draft form, because there is sort of highlights, I guess, in terms of policy development timeline that even it takes a couple of weeks to prepare a statement and then probably a couple of weeks to then formally vote on it and get from the whole constituency. So with that in mind, what I would suggest we do is perhaps just have a 5-minute summary from each of the constituencies on their current thinking so far, bearing in mind that we have written statements, but I think it might be useful for verbally summary, give the opportunity for council members to comment on those positions. So if I perhaps kick off with the non-commercial one, Mark Schneider, would you like to briefly comment on your statement so far?
Bruce, can you hear me?
Yes.
I could read the statement in 5 minutes, but I won't do that. Like other constituencies, we've had very little time to go into all the details fully. So even if it doesn't really state out, our statement is certainly preliminary. I think the main question we ask is to make a distinction between different aspects of issues, whether it concerns technical coordination, like in the case of SiteFinder, or whether it is more related to consumer protection. So far, ICANN has done very little in the scope of consumer protection. If it is going to do that, then we should take a very clear position about it. Another topic that we have addressed is whether it makes sense to distinguish between unsupported and supported registries. And a point that is very important to us, which is at the end of our statement, is that there should be very clear guidelines what type of issues can be dealt with by ICANN staff, and what others have to go through a constituency process.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any comments on those statements from Mark? Okay. The intellectual property, who would like to briefly summarise that?
Yeah, Nicholas here.
Nicholas, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, as reflected in our statement, the intellectual property constituency supported from the outset the idea of having a formalized procedure in place. We were basically very sensitive to the findings of the staff manager's report that was posted in November, I believe, and which emphasized what seemed as a need to avoid consistent decisions and or sufficient justification for decisions that be taken with relation to the introduction of changes in the operation of the registry. In our statement, we have tried to outline what a formalized procedure might look like, and much of what is stated is, of course, not new, does not come out of the blue, but often reflects current practices. But anyway, I believe that the key thing here, guarantee efficiency, openness, and transparency, basically make sure that the appropriate degree of certainty, which is needed by the registry community, is in place. So the suggestions forward by the IPC reflect what we call the three-tiered procedure, whereby a request from a registry operator would go through an initial review. I won't detail like different stages in each of the three tiers that are developed in our constituency statement, but it should be said that we have tried to pay attention to the need of designing an inclusive process involving all affected stakeholders at the different stages of the procedures. So to get back to this three-tiered approach, the idea is that the final initial review report should look at whether the registry request should go ahead or if it should be the subject of a quick look and to make this assessment, initial review should look at three major questions. The first one is whether there's consistency with the current registry contract, and secondly, if need for a modification of the contract, and or three, if there's need for ICANN approval. A yes to question two or three would automatically lead then to a second stage. And here again, without going into the details which are developed in the statement itself of how comments should be gathered from interested stakeholders and so on, should just be said that the second tier, this quick look analysis, would basically look at three questions. First, does the change applied by the request of a registry operator harm the third party? And second question would be, would the stability and the security of the DNS system be threatened? And three, would the implementation of the request violate an existing ICANN policy? So, and here, if any answer is yes, then we would move to the third tier, which would be the evaluation and consultation stage. And in this third stage, a final evaluation notification report would basically draw up a list of stakeholders, affected stakeholders, detail the need for external expert advice, then call for the creation of a task force whose report would be sent to the ICANN president and ultimately end up for the consideration of the ICANN board. For those of you who have already read our statement, we've tried to be as precise as possible when it to the calendar. We've tried to include deadlines in the proposals. They would of course open to discussions. Maybe they're too restrictive. Maybe they're too optimistic. But we hope that this statement could be a good basis, or at least a good input to this PDP.
Thanks, Nicholas. One
comment I would have is on your second-tier quick look analysis, you didn't seem to include the use of external experts, yet some of the questions you're looking for is, you know, does it threaten stability or security? I would think that there may be a requirement to get external advice at that point.
True that the external experts have only been, if I remember the text correctly, been envisaged in the third year.
In the third phase, yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on the intellectual property proposal? Okay. The ISP area, would you like to comment either Tony Holmes or Tony Harris?
I'll do that if you like, Bruce.
Okay, yeah.
I'd just make a few main points from the response. Firstly, the constituency believed that it's essential for ICANN to develop policies that govern the introduction of new services in the namespace. And recent events, we feel, have proved that relying on the negotiation and implementation of contracts is insufficient and just cannot guarantee success. And we underlined the point, I think, a couple of times in our response, that this impacts all stakeholders, not just those who are making the changes. So we don't believe that any one party should be able to determine on their own whether a new service is compliant. And in terms of recommendation, then any process for new services has to provide an effective means for notifying all of those impacted, particularly changes to the architecture or behaviour of the internet. In those cases, you need to give prior effective disclosure and allow examination by the appropriate bodies. Normally, it would be the technical bodies, we believe. The other main issue in response is on the quick look aspect. And the quick look provision in the staff manager's report still raises some issues for us. We think there has to be a process which needs to explicitly spell out just what quick look means so that all parties have a common understanding of that. And we don't believe that that exists currently. And also that any quick look process has to give a full explanation of what role the council has, if any, in that activity. And again, don't feel that that's really been covered off. And the final recommendation I'd like to pick up on is that any process that looks at this issue has to have a process of appeals attached to it as well. So, I think that concludes everything I want to say at this stage.
Okay, thanks, Tony. Any comments on or questions for Tony? Okay, the business constituency. Grant, do you want to summarise your position?
Sure, Bruce. All I would say at this stage is we have put forward our general comments by the 12th, and we noted at the time that the comments had not completed our internal consultation process. We've had further consultation, and they haven't changed. I'm not quite sure when our consultation finishes, but it's probably in about 3 or 4 days. At the same time, we also have our consultation within the BC specific responses to the four main tasks identified in terms of reference, and I'll be posting those just as soon as our consultation closes. And I'm happy to see that our thinking in many aspects is pretty much along the lines of others. Obviously there are differences, but let's get the BC's statement out there and we'll happily work the rest. Thanks.
Okay. Jordan or Ken, have you got any update on the status of the registry constituency response?
Sure. Well, as you can see, we have not yet submitted a formal response. I do apologize for that. Unfortunately, this proves to be an issue that obviously has required a great deal of discussion, and we want to make sure that we arrive at a
statement that all members of the constituency are comfortable with, and just given the differences between sponsored and unsponsored and the various different types of registry operators we have. We're not quite there yet. There's text being circulated even as we speak that I believe is bridging some of those gaps, and we hope to have a statement in the near future. We do view this as an important issue and are prioritizing it quite high internally.
Ruth?
Yes?
Yeah, I'd also like to follow up on one thing that on what Jordan just said, and that was because of the executory situation with some of the proposals regarding the modification term of reference, there was a desire to step back and look at what we were going to eventually be commenting on with respect to that part of it. So I think now that that's been resolved, it will be much easier for us as well to move forward. So I appreciate that we were able to get by that today. And I would expect as well that we should have something very
good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thomas Rossler, did you want to comment on the ALEC statement?
Yes, I would love to. First of all, I also have to add the disclaimer that this is a preliminary statement and we are soliciting comments on this and are just about to forward it to those at large structures we have accredited so far. The statement is mainly analytical in nature, so I'm not too hesitant to make some points out of the statement. There are basically three main points to it. On the procedural side, we agree with those groups that had earlier asked for a transparent, objective, and very importantly, open process. We would notice that there should also be an early opportunity for public comment in cases to be used in reviewing changes. On the substantive side, there are two points. First of all, we believe that it would be helpful for the quick look analysis to ask whether success of a new registry service is an observable. Is it possible to use market feedback in order to assess whether a registry change is a good idea or is marketing feedback not available to make this determination? If market feedback is available, then we would argue that only in cases of grave harm that would have to be demonstrated, agreement should be withheld. If, on the other hand, market feedback is not available, for instance, due to switching codes, then there needs to be a more thorough process in which a registry presents an analysis of a proposed change and satisfies the community that there is no harm connected to this change. Just to give one example of why a proposed change may not be accessible to market feedback as an instrument for measuring success and measuring whether the change is a good idea. Think about a change that affects all registrants in a given PLD. Switching costs for registrants are generally high. So market feedback, which may consist in picking a different PLD, is skewed and is not readily available to provide the necessary information. Still, when market feedback is available, there are some kinds of harm that we would particularly suggest that the traces focus on. These are three main points we are making here. First, changes should not change the protocol neutrality of the internet and of the DNS. A change should not make the internet a less hospitable place to an existing protocol or to future protocols just in order to cater to the needs of one particular protocol. Second, and more generally, a registry change should not be imposing costs at the edge in order to generate profit at the center. And third, and a little more specific again, registries have a natural monopoly in a specific TLD, so they are in a very special position, and this monopoly should not be leveraged onto different markets. This is the first kind of harm we would particularly focus on. That's all for the moment, and if we get additional feedback, we will provide this to you.
Okay, thanks, Thomas. The registrars are also in the process of developing a position. There's been a few drafts submitted, and currently there's a motion before the registrar's constituency to vote on the current draft. The current draft basically lists some of the areas that are within the contracts that seem to require consent. One of the key points the registrars make is that the definition of registry services should be clear and consistent across all registries. So in terms of the definition, we wouldn't see a distinction between sponsored or unsponsored. In terms of issues that ICANN would need to consider, we've basically constrained it to what's in the ICANN mission and core values, and the ones that seem most relevant are the core value that relates to operational stability and reliability, and the core value that, where feasible, it should depend on market mechanisms to promote and sustain competition, and introducing and promoting competition where practical and beneficial in the public interest. So those, I guess, are the core values. In terms of fast-track processes, we would think that areas of consent that relate to things such as changes to reports to ICANN or changes to a specification of data or something could be potentially possible for a fast-track process, whereas changes that change the nature of the registrar agreement or changes that relate to registry services are probably more likely to require a more extensive review. We certainly recommend use of external experts to decide whether there are issues in operational stability or reliability. And in fact, we suggest that those terms be more clearly defined so that there's better understanding of what operational stability means and reliability means, etc. In terms of an appeal process, we basically note that there is an existing appeal procedure within the ICANN bylaws that could be used, but there hasn't really been agreement within the registrar's constituency on whether that process should be shortened. There are some differing views there. So I guess that's where the registrar is up there. Barbara, are you still on the call?
Yes, I am.
I guess at this point, what would be useful would be for the staff manager to perhaps take what you have and attempt to combine it into a single report. Does that seem feasible?
It does. And would you like me to attempt summaries of the statements or just include them?
Well, I think it, certainly you can include them by reference, but I think if you could attempt summaries and perhaps try to identify where there are common themes.
Yes, that was my intention, was to do an analysis that looked at areas of commonality and difference.
Yes, that would be good. Would that be possible in about a week's time?
When is the next...
The next council meeting is on the 5th of February. So if you had produced something several days before that people could
Yeah, why don't I set as my target date the 28th?
Of Jan?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. And we'll hold another council call on the 5th to perhaps consider that and start to try and identify commonality those responses. Okay, the next item of the agenda is the planning for the ICANN meeting in Rome. I had requested that the ICANN staff look at scheduling four slots for four workshops, three workshops.
I spoke with Diane about this morning.
Yes.
And we'd like to say that there's going to be the standard constituency meeting day. And then Wednesday, we're not going to schedule anything competing with GNSO workshops. So so consider Wednesday to be another GNSO-focused day.
Okay, so the workshops will most likely occur in the morning and perhaps early afternoon, and then the council would meet in the afternoon. Is that sort of the rough understanding at this stage?
That's the understanding that we're working with, yeah.
Good, thank you. As what we have also done in the last few ICANN meetings is had a separate council breakfast that we invite the members of the board to just informally discuss what we're currently working on policy-wise and to get any feedback. Glenn, can you comment on that scheduled and when it's scheduled?
Yes, Bruce, it's scheduled for Tuesday the 2nd. From 7:30 to 9, because the constituency start at 9. I have got the, it's a separate restaurant. I've asked for one big table. And I have made provision for about 35 people, which includes the board and the GNSO members, plus liaisons. I've also asked Diane to keep that time apart for board members, to keep it free on the schedule.
Okay, good. And then the final point was an invitation to the board to attend the council meeting itself. I'm not sure that we need to do a formal invitation here because it is a public session, and so anyone may attend. I guess the issue is really how much is scheduled in conflict with the GNSO Council. And Barbara, you are suggesting that nothing's been scheduled at that time, is that right?
Nothing by staff is being scheduled. So if there was another, if the GAC were to schedule something during that time, that's certainly a little bit outside of our control, but we're making every effort to not have conflict. I would suggest that it might be appropriate to send an invitation as a reminder of the timing of the meeting.
Okay. Glenn, can you organize this?
Yes, I'll do that, Bruce. And I'll also be sending out invitations for the breakfast.
Yes, thank you. So I think it's really just an invitation to the breakfast and reminding them that the council meeting is on the Wednesday afternoon, and probably letting them know that there will be workshops on the topics of who is and the approval process.
Fine.
Okay.
Thomas here, brief question, if I may.
Yes, go ahead, Thomas.
Since the GAC liaison is no longer on this call, maybe it would be a good idea to also inform the GAC of the planned schedule of the workshops and of the council session and of the agenda plan for that.
Yes.
Also with the intention to let them know what the schedule is and what times what you prefer them to keep free, even if you don't say it explicitly.
Yes, and I think certainly we would want the members of the GAC, that GAC has its own internal who is working group, I believe. So we'd certainly would like those members to attend the Who Is workshops as well. Okay. Under other business, I have the adoption of the guidelines for producing issues reports, which Philip had presented last meeting. Philip, if I can ask that be put on the agenda for the meeting on the 5th, are you okay with it?
Absolutely fine, yeah.
Okay. Is there any other business anyone would like to raise? Okay, well, at that point, I'll thank everybody for their attendance, and the next call will be on the 5th of February. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Bruce. Bye.
Bye.